Hi folks, and welcome to Leaders and Managers Hub. It's Ray. My next guest is a very, very long-term friend of mine. She's been coach, mentor, inspiration, and fantastic friend to me for a long time. Julia Principe and I have collaborated in the past, and hopefully we will do so in the future. I've been trying to get Julia on the podcast for a long time, as I said, and I've used the social isolation, can't even say it now, it's starting to get to me, and I've managed to corner her in her living room. She couldn't run away from me anymore, got her on Zoom, and we've recorded hours and hours of content, which we will be releasing over the coming weeks. This is the first one. We talk about Julia's passion for health and safety, we talk about trust, and we talk about values. Welcome to Julia. Hope you enjoy. It's just so incredible. Gotta have it. Can't let it go. If you don't try, you'll never know that this is incredible. Now, have you ever wondered how the best did it? They never second guessed. They didn't set limits. Are you a follower or a visionary? Can you handle the load that you were meant to carry? Cause we're on a mission. Listen, it's beyond description. We don't want to fit in if we're living in a contradiction. We need a brand of passion that you can't imagine. Don't hesitate. Rub the lamp, lad. So I've got with me today, folks, Julia Principe. Julia and I have worked together in the past. For me, she has been a great friend, mentor, coach, leader, and source of inspiration. And I am absolutely delighted that Julia has been able to join us today. Welcome to the podcast, Julia.
Thank you, Ray. Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
It's been great that you've been able to join us. So, Julia, just to sort of set the scene, I'd like you, if you could, just to give us a little sense of you, talk a little bit about your background and, you know, what you've achieved. What you've achieved academically and sort of what you do, what makes Julia Julia.
Right. So, well, for the last 15 years, I have been, you know, between academia and work, I have been developing a career in health and safety. So I have a few degrees in occupational psychology and organizational psychology with a specialization in health and safety. Health and safety, the psychology actually of health and safety, what's behind that? What's, you know, everything stemming from an organizational perspective. So, you know, I'm not the typical health and safety professional that you may know, but I am, again, my focus, my lenses are always the social dynamics. So I mentioned the lenses I always wear as a health and safety professional are the social dynamics and the organizational dynamics making up safety. Right. So not the compliance point of view, but the wise point of view. So going back to Simon Sinek. Right. And I am health and safety. You know, the preservation of life for me is I love it. I love making visible things people don't see. And I'm in my private life, I am a dancer, so not just, you know, protecting life, but also enjoying life, right? In the last 6 months, I have gone a huge personal at the age of 36, I've been diagnosed with an eating disorder, which I, you know, I've been living with for probably, I don't know, 30, 28 years, not knowing it. And fighting through that has given me breakthroughs after breakthroughs. And it all comes back to protecting life and enjoying life, understanding what and seeing what we cannot see. So this is me in a nutshell.
Well, thank you for that, Julia. That's fantastic. Now, just to give a bit of context, you and I have worked together, as I said, as colleagues in the construction mm-hmm. industry.
Yes.
And that's where we met, and that's where we've got some of our shared experiences. What I'm particularly happy about with recording this cast is that you and I have spent many tens of hours just talking, talking. And we've always said we really should record our conversations, but we never actually had. So this is a real opportunity to do it. And I'm really delighted. And, you know, having known you for so long and you've been such an inspiration to me, I know that you've got an awful lot of things to add and a lot of great experiences and insights to share with people. So I know this is going to be fantastic. Just in terms of then your the health and safety side of thing, because like that, as we've talked about many, many times, so I've had some experience of being involved in behavioral based safety programs and stuff. Mm-hmm. What is it for you?
And by the way, I still have a book of yours.
Yes, you do. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So it's safe with me and I have to return it. Okay.
Yeah, no problem. Well, we'll look forward to that, because when we get out of this, we're definitely doing dinner. And I'll bring a little recording device along as well, so we can.
Yeah, I do.
I'm very interested in terms of your take on behaviors and how, like, we've been quite good in the construction industry at using what we understand about human behavior to drive behavior from a health and safety perspective. Mm-hmm. What about that has been the most interesting thing to you? Because like you said, you'd had a life in academia where, you know, you've accumulated a considerable wealth of knowledge and experience and education. What was it specifically about health and safety that you thought, wow, I can really make an impact here?
Wow. Well, so as I mentioned before, let me go a step back. So behavioral safety has a few pillars, and some of these pillars are, you know, deciding with people what's the right thing to do, and having an observation period. So we literally observe people doing what we said was the right thing to do. And then after that, we keep feeding people feedback. So, you know, they can adjust their behavior. You know, we can get absorbed into the day-to-day, you know, operations and sudden problems, et cetera, et cetera. And therefore, a constant feedback is crucial for those people, you know, running their professional life every day to adjust to, again, what we said was the right thing to do. And also it's a way of, you know, questioning, is what we said is the right way to do still good, right? Mm. Now, this takes an awful amount of interaction, team communication, and adult speaking. And what I have, you know, realized, and now again, having had that specific experience in construction only, so the behavioral inaction, I've had my experience in construction. There are so many, I've identified so many gaps between that, you know, what I've just described and what happens on site. And that one being, one of the biggest gap being the actual communication and engagement with people. It's probably the numbers, you know, of people working in construction. It's probably the transitory, you know, nature of some workforce. There are so many, you know, language problems as well, barriers as well. You know, I can definitely mention so many reasons why the outcome is the, you know, we end up telling people what to do, and we end up policing them, and you know, the interaction is, and the engagement with people is very down to the people on the ground having their personal nature of wanting to work with their people in that way, rather than being a company policy of doing it that way, or a company culture of doing it that way.
Okay, so let me put something to you then, and you know, you can come back at me. So my experience is very much that of command and control culture, and mm-hmm. we, for a long, long time, we absolutely pathologically avoided giving people the opportunity to creatively problem solve and creatively think and objectively think and critically think. And so we got ourselves into this situation of command and control where everything was done via process and procedure. And, you know, we banged our heads against the wall because we kept saying we've got all these processes and procedures and yet we're still injuring people and people are still getting killed in our industry, you know. And then it was, okay, so we need to look at this from a behavioral perspective. So we, a lot of organizations, and I was involved with some of them, introduced behavioral-based safety programs and that sort of thing. But we did it as kind of like a, from a health and safety perspective only. What mm-hmm. we didn't do was take the opportunity to look at, as organizations, how do we behave? If we behave in a command and control fashion, you know, are we encouraging people to give the best of them and to take, you know, individual responsibility, et cetera, et cetera? So to tackle it from a health and safety perspective alone, it's a bit, you need to tackle it as a much bigger thing.
Absolutely. And that sounds to me, HR kind of performance evaluation. That sounds to me, career development. That sounds to me, so this is your career path. This is what you need to grow. And health and safety is part of it, is not it. What are you doing about it? And these moments never happen. So, I've never seen, I've never seen them happening with an operative, by the way. And probably, probably with supervisors in a very, you know, the closer the physical closeness, the bigger the physical closeness to the power, the more, you know, there seems to be, you know, an eye on it. But, the more we go on the ground, the more things disappear. And this is a characteristic of construction, for example. You know, look at NHS, for example, as a big organization. You know, there is something that they are dealing with. They deal with that hazards every day. They have people, either a capillary network all over, you know, the nation. What's happening there? Okay, there is something that they are managing to do. And at organizational level, delegated to region levels or hospital levels, blah, blah, blah. There is a well-thought process behind that because we cannot afford to lose anyone on that. And I think in construction, there is a little bit of pride missing where I'm not sure people perceive themselves, you know, how big, you know, what they're doing is. And so all these, again, sophisticated processes of, you know, career development and how you're growing are not actually thought on from an organizational perspective, from an organizational functioning perspective, and therefore are not cascaded down. And that's how we miss a lot of wonderful people on site, very capable, but just, you know, absolutely discontent by their working experience.
See, I was involved some years ago in a behavioral based safety program when I was with Enterprise Managed Services, and what we did was we worked with an organization called Ryder Marsh. They're they do a lot of accident investigation work. They do a lot of behavioral training around the psychology of health and safety and around leadership and stuff. And we developed a program that had three levels to it, because what we realized was that if we just targeted it at the site-based people, it lacked credibility. What we needed to do was to change the safety culture all the way through the organization. So we developed three tiers of training. It was for senior managers, middle managers, and site-based people. But what we also did was mm-hmm. that we took it not just within the behavioral safety realm, but we dealt with things all the way through the organization, including, you know, big ticket items like how do we communicate and stuff like that, and having the awareness of, for the senior managers, of what is actually going on the ground. And one of the things we did was we changed the safety tours. So prior to that situation, the safety tour had been a compliance-based command and control tick box exercise. Do you have all this documentation on site? Tick, tick, tick. Yes, you're great. Everything's perfectly safe here. To a scenario where a senior manager's safety tour was to go on site and was to have a conversation with people and actually ask them what it was about their particular job or task that was really good, and what could, you know, what if they could think of one thing that currently made it difficult that could be improved, what could it be about? So the safety tour was much more about having a conversation and receiving that feedback. But then we also realized that, okay, so with that, if people are going to share with us the information and be confident that they can share the information and trust us that they're, you know, they're not going to be adversely affected by sharing information, we need to actually demonstrate to people that we're taking on what they're saying on board and we're doing something about it. And so one of the other initiatives that came out of it was a communication tool to say, you said this to us, this is what we did. And we actually started to demonstrate to people that, you know, you have the opportunity, you have the right, and you have the moral obligation to speak up when something's not quite right, and you will not be judged for that. We embrace that. We love it. Thank you very much. And this is what we're doing about it, because we take what you say seriously. And that started to create a whole different dynamic of trust very, very quickly. You know, the guys on the ground, on site, started to realize that actually they could trust the management levels above them, that people would take them seriously, that people wouldn't judge them for what they're saying and what they're raising, and that actually we were all in it together, and that the senior management were absolutely invested in their safety and well-being. And that created, it was a complete cultural change within the organization, and it was amazing to be part of. But I've seen in so many situations where these things are rolled out as an initiative, but because they're not, it's not a cultural change within the organization, it lacks credibility. And people look at it and say, okay, so you want to increase the level of communication with regards to health and safety, whether it's through feedback, close calls, whatever. But actually, in every other sense of the business, you're not living what you're preaching. So it lacks credibility. It's a fad. It's something that's going to be short term, and we're not really invested in it because we don't trust you that this is actually a genuine behavior and culture change.
Oh, absolutely agreed on that, and love hearing that experience. So I have two observations. So first of all, I have a question. So, you know, this kind of intervention you did, you've just described, how long did it last?
So we took about 6 months to develop the program, and we rolled it out over the next 6 or 7 months. But that was just the initial rollout. There was an awful lot of work that went on behind the scenes to create the framework to allow it to be a culture change and not just a health and safety initiative. And the company was bought out a couple of years back. So, you know, I haven't worked with them for a while, but certainly when I left the organization, they were still living that culture change and that behavioral change. So it was a complete mindset change, and it was very, very powerful to be part of it.
Because that's another point of, that's part of what you mentioned. So that being an organizational learning operation rather than drop off onto, you know, someone to get them do what we want them to do. Because otherwise it's just something dressed off something. It's another command and control dressed off something else, right?
Yeah.
So the reason why I asked the question, how long did it last? It's because, you know, how, you know, all these efforts of putting things together it actually makes sense when we actually do it, and when we do and sustain it all throughout. When I'm not asking people, oh, what do you do? Because you know, the company is requiring me to do so, but it's because I literally want to know what's happening on the ground, so that I can integrate that information into a leaner management.
Yes.
So this is you know, being, you know, there are two birds with one stone. People feel they bring value. So employees, they feel they bring value to the company. They feel they actually make a difference, and they feel they have a brain to give to people. And the organization actually cashes on it in a very good way, because people on the ground know much better than me, right?
Yes.
So this tendency, and there are some companies out there, you know, with this tendency of command and control, things needs to go my way. They have very huge difficulties in delegating. You know, they have huge difficulties. It's all about personal status, lack of trust, incapability of letting go. You know, you having management personal issues being cascaded down onto a whole company there, by the way.
You used a very important word there, trust, and I think it's a much misunderstood word in organizations. What does trust mean? You know, if you look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you know, I think there's an acknowledgement that, you know, times have shifted a little bit, but I think one of the most important things for any human, and if we take it back to what makes us successful as an animal, a species of animal on the planet, you know, we're not the fastest animal, we're not the strongest animal, but what makes us prolific and successful, in air quotes, is our ability to collaborate in large teams and to create culture and society. And at the very basis of culture, a successful culture and society, there has to be an element of trust. And what I mean by that is that, for example, we send our children to school, and that's a huge trust thing. So we're entrusting probably the most precious thing that we have to somebody else to look after, because we trust them that they are, A, they're better equipped to educate them than we are, but also then it allows us to go and do other things and be productive in society, whether that's with work or volunteering or whatever it might be. And the whole of society is based on trust. And we see what happens from time to time when that trust breaks down and people suddenly no longer feel safe in that society. And it's one of the reasons why we tend to coalesce as groups, you know, when we travel. You know, if you have your close circle of friends, but if you go to another town, but you meet somebody from your town, you kind of automatically sort of magnet towards them, because you're like, oh, we have that in common, so therefore I trust you more than all of these other people around me, for no real rational or logical reason. You know, if we travel outside of our county or our state, you know, we meet people from our state, and again, we, you know, we sort of naturally attract towards them because they're from our state. If we go abroad and we meet people from our home country, again, we sort of naturally coalesce with them because, you know, we speak the same language, we have a lot of this the same culture and beliefs, etc. And that's what makes society quite important. So when trust breaks down, all of that goes out the window, and it kind of generates every man for himself kind of scenario. And I really feel that organizations don't value trust enough. One of the interesting things for me during this social isolation and the need for remote working, and I've talked about this before on the cast, is the lengths to which organizations will go to measure whether their people are actually working when they're working from home. You know, everything from, mm-hmm. you know, insisting that meetings are done with video on, irrespective of bandwidth, having to use specific software, logging the number of emails that are sent, even key loggers and data loggers, just to see how long people have been logged into the system or whatever it might be. And, you know, if the way I look at it is, if you don't trust your people to do the job that, you know, and to work for the organization as diligently and effectively as they can, how can I trust your people that they will do the best for me, either as a consumer or as a business to business transaction? And also, if you can't trust your people, why is that? Look at that. You know, have you got the right people? And also for the people, if you feel that your organization doesn't trust you, like, are you working for the right organization? Because at the very, very heart of what we do, we need to feel safe. And as part of that feeling safe, we need to know that there's trust there. And I think that's really been exposed over the last few weeks, that that lack of, that inherent lack of trust. It's interesting to me.
Yes. Well, you just gave me a little breakthrough there, because the day I was asked, so when working from home, the day I was asked, you don't go shopping, do you, in those hours? I should have left there and then.
Yes.
I just realized that kind of question that was a sort of a made, you know, chuckling, was actually hiding pretty offensive, almost, opinion of me. But anyways, the very important thing I wanted to say on what you said is, I think this trust belongs to those people who are coming from a perspective of the trading time for money. So those employers not being very organized, they are purchasing people's times, and people are selling their hours for you know, some money. And this has nothing to do with the value we deliver, of course, during those hours. Efficiency has everything to do with trust and nothing to do with the amount of hours we spend. So I would say those employers who cannot leave people work from home, it's because they are not efficient themselves. So they have nothing, they don't know how to use their people. So, you know, for their business continuity, for their business operations, for the business, mission. That's how I see those things. Lack of trust is because there's lack of organization and efficiency.
I would take it one step further, Julia, and I would say that if there's a lack of trust, that organizations have employed the wrong people for the wrong reasons. And what I mean by that is, if you're purely relying on the commoditization of your workforce. In other words, the reason people work for us is because we pay more, or we have more hours, or we give a better benefits package. Then that doesn't generate trust. If you're engaging people, if people work for you because they believe what you believe, and they believe in the values and the culture of the organization and the objectives and goals of the organization, why the business is the business, then trust is a given, because people are invested in it, not because they have to, but because they want to. And if you have people on board and they're doing what they're doing because they want to, not because they have to, then trust isn't even a question, because those people will do that for you, whether they're the best paid, whether they're in the office, whether they're sat at home in their pajamas. They will do that because they're not actually doing it for you. They're doing it for themselves. They're doing it because of what they believe in themselves. And the reason they work for you is because what they believe about themselves is what you believe about the organization. And I think this is a real opportunity for people to recalibrate their whole, again, getting back to the whole values-based society, to recalibrate the whole question around employment. Ask yourselves the question, when this thing starts to pick up again, and, you know, it becomes an employee's market. Choose wisely. Look at the organizations who believe what you believe, whose the way they operate is exactly in line with what you believe about yourself. Because if you align yourself with that organization, you will work for them, not because you have to earn a living. That's a given. We all have to earn a living. But you will work for them because you want to, for you.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. You know, I have 3 master's degrees, and that's not because someone has been checking on me and, you know, monitoring my clock-ins and clock-outs or, you know, attendance presence. No, I have, you know, showed up every day. I did the things I was supposed to do. And, you know, there was a completely different array of factors making me show up. Okay. And that's the same, you know, at the end of the day, as I see, employment, like it's a little bit of dating. And this is going to be, it's going to become more true. Business models will become more agile. I do see, you know, us becoming a society of, you know, lots of individuals being in the network rather than, you know, big companies employing people. Because the value thing, you know, is going to become the central. So trust and value will be the two focal points. If you deliver value, I trust you. Simple as that. Simple as that. So, and it's a little bit of dating. You know, have you ever seen any successful relationship where the two people are in there because they have to, or because I can't leave, otherwise my financial situation will be jeopardized. Those dating relationships are absolutely, broken.
Yes.
And only those relationships where it's both choices of being in there and where both parties are actually, you know, growing, you know, contributing to both growth, but at the same time, they are getting out something, you know, in a balance. That's where a relationship are flourishing. So nothing really new.
I think that successful organizations going forward, whether they're organizations in the same model as we understand organizations now, or whether they are more sort of loose collaborations of individual contributors, I think that success will be around organizations or groups of individuals who have a clear sense of purpose and why they do what they do, because they will attract people who fit in with that model. And people who are emotionally invested in achieving the same thing because they want to do it for themselves. I think they'll be the most successful. And I think, you know, they often say that, you know, in the most successful organizations, you can pretty much teach somebody to do whatever job you want them to do. But if you don't have a correct alignment of culture, values, beliefs, trust, then any amount of academic education or professional competence will not make that person a high performer within a team. And I think we for a long, long time, we focused on identifying the cream of the crop competency-wise and then trying to get the best cultural fit for the organization. I think going forward, it'll be much more about cultural fit first and then competence beyond that, because if you can have the most competent person in the world in a team, but if they don't fit in the culture of the team, they just won't be effective, and it can actually in many cases be counterproductive.
Absolutely. Yep. I absolutely see things going that way. And you know, I was reading, I saw a post on Facebook, an entrepreneur, he raised everyone's it was in the US. I had to retrieve that one. He increased everyone's wage to $75,000. Everyone was earning the same. Mm-hmm. and $75,000. Okay. His turnover went through the roof in a year. Everyone was paid something they could live on decently. affording something else. And there were no difference. There were no hierarchical. He was giving himself $75,000 too. So this, leveling the financial side of it was telling people there's no difference in the contribution you give to this. You are as important as that person.
Yes.
And everyone, instead of looking at the financial difference between paychecks, the conversation was that, so that worry was out, or that envy was out. All the conversations were around the what am I doing here? So what's my contribution? What do you, what's your bit? What's my bit? How do we put them together? Literally. I loved it. I love that story.
It's interesting to me you talking about that, because certainly the corporate culture, probably more so in the States than in the UK, but it's still in the UK as well. There's this feeling of that to attract the best talent at the top, so at chief executive level, we have to pay the money. And, so you're treating your chief executive as a commodity. But we've seen so often businesses failing despite the fact that the chief executive is earning a huge salary. And so you've kind of got to think that's a bit of a broken model, that if you've got somebody who, as a leader, as a chief executive, is an effective leader, they're able to understand and communicate and articulate the business's culture and manage the business as a cultural entity, that actually that's where the true success and the longevity of success lies. Rather than if you just have to rely on paying the best salary, then is that person truly invested in the organization? Are they there because they can take the salary, or are they there because they want to be there because they believe in the organization? And I think that's becoming more and more important for organizations, certainly for the ones that are starting to stick their head above the crowd and show continued and long-lasting success. It's not all about the money. It's all about the bottom line, but the method to get there is contrary to what the norm is. They're looking at things differently.
You see, and all I hear there is value again. If I pay someone based on the CEO label, it doesn't guarantee any value I'm getting out of this role / person, right? Mm. And as you mentioned, there are companies collapsing, despite their CEO being paying thousands of pounds, hundreds of thousands of pounds.
Millions, right?
Millions, in fact, for some of them, absolutely. So what's the, okay, so there is something, as you said, doesn't work. What if we shift to a profit sharing model? Again, the guy raising, everyone has the same, very decent to live on wage. And then the more we do, the more we grow, the more profit share. So the more profit there is to share.
Mm-hmm.
Start seeing what happens.
Yeah, for sure.
Because also none of them will see a glass ceiling on what they can earn,
mm-hmm.
right? So there is also that kind of self-realization push to do better and better, because also my basic needs, going back to Maslow hierarchy, my basic needs are satisfied with the money I have.
Yes.
Rather, if I have to think, this wage is not enough, to pay my rent. To be honest with you, these people have bigger problems than their performance at work.
Mm. Yes, absolutely.
So that's it for this cast, folks. Plenty more to come from Julia over the coming weeks. Hope you enjoyed it. If you want to get in contact with Julia, you can feel free to email us at podcast@leadersandmanagershub.com. Have a lovely week. Gotta have it, can't let it go. If you don't try, you'll never know that this is incredible. Now have you ever wondered how the best did it? They never second guessed.
load that you were meant to carry. Cause we're on a mission, listen, it's beyond description. We don't wanna fit in if we're living in a contradiction. We need a brand of passion that you can't imagine. Don't hesitate, rub the lamp, Aladdin.